This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Brewers Outlet, Sunbury Motor Company, and Purdy Insurance. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And this half hour brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. Ford Kia Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory. With the Sunbury Motors Guarantee, they go over every vehicle with a fine-tooth comb. And I can tell you personally, the buying experience, the financing experience, they're awesome. Pressure? Nope. They talk with you. What do you want? They don't just like, hey, why don't you come over here and see this? No, they want to know what you want. What do you like? And the service department, quick lane, routine, inspections, difficult, whatever. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf online, sunburymotors.com. With that, we bring in the phenomenal Neil Coulong. Sir Neil, always a pleasure. Welcome.
As always, it's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
All right, so Sunday I'm doing the Penn State Buffalo basketball game, and we've got the Steeler game on in the back of the booth. And Dick Girardi, my basketball broadcast partner, looks over at me and says, the Cincinnati defense must really stink. The Steelers have over 40 points. Okay. Your thoughts on that particular statement?
I'm glad you asked that right away. To be honest with you, I don't know how many poorer performances I've seen from an NFL defense than what I saw from Cincinnati on Sunday. That was embarrassing. I'll admit I haven't watched a ton of the Bengals this year. From what I've gathered asking around, that wasn't really an atypical performance. But oddly, what it made me think of was there was a time when Steelers defensive coordinator Terrell Austin had, I think his defense set an NFL record for giving up like 500 or more yards in like seven straight games or something.
Yes.
Like that.
Yep.
The last one was against the Steelers. And the next job that Austin had was with the Steelers. So it always kind of made me think of that. It makes me wonder if that stat might have crossed his mind while he was watching what honestly looked like players bouncing off an invisible force field from any Steelers player that touched the ball. They were nowhere close to him. I mean, you've heard me say this. I'm not ever going to call out an NFL football player for not being tough, but
that's right.
Nobody seemed to want to hit anybody. I mean, it really was like we've watched the Steelers offense plenty. We know when Najee Harris gets the ball, he's got about a yard until he gets hit by somebody. You know, that's normal. We're used to that. Receivers aren't getting yards after the catch. They really haven't been. Probably since Antonio Brown to a large degree. What we saw was a Steelers offense that went unchecked and unchallenged for a good solid 5 or 6 yards after they got the ball. And I don't want to say the Steelers offense didn't execute, because they did. They did the things they were supposed to do. I thought they protected pretty well. Overall, it was a good offensive performance, but it just didn't seem like there was a Bengals player that was playing in normal motion the entire Bengals defensive player who was playing at normal speed the entire game. And it was really concerning just from a competitive standpoint for Cincinnati. I don't think a single player defensively is going to be there for them next year, if not earlier, because I mean they're you know, several prayers away from a playoff berth right now, and their offense is playing very well. They did some great things offensively. They're a really good offensive team. Mm-hmm. It isn't often in the NFL that you see that big of a gap between a single team's offense and its defense. But Cincinnati's defense was more of the story of that game than anything else. And good for the Steelers for, you know, putting up points where they're being given those opportunities. Certainly, Pittsburgh's defense made a bunch of plays as well, but Cincinnati's defense was, wow, that was something else. I don't know how many times I've seen that in the NFL.
I feel like when it comes to Joe Burrow, the Bengals' defense is wasting some really good quarterback play.
You saw some high-level Joe Burrow play on Sunday. I also dislike giving the high-level comparisons in a superlative way, but Burrow reminded me of a young Aaron Rodgers in that game. And what I mean by that is back in McCarthy's early days with Rodgers, he had him dropping seven and just bombing the ball down the field, kind of staying in the pocket. There was a point after he got hurt, I think for the second time when he was a starter, he came back, and the big difference was, and the Steelers saw this the year before they faced him in the Super Bowl, he started dropping three or five, never seven anymore, and then he would escape out, like basically up a gap and then out to the side behind the line of scrimmage. Burrow probably did that four or five times, and he completed every pass for at least 15, 20 yards. Right. The Steelers had no answer for it. It's really difficult to stop a quarterback that has the guts to run into the teeth of the defense and then escape out the side, not exactly knowing where the pressure is coming from. Now, to the Steelers' credit, T.J. Watt had a big game and caught up with Burrow on one of those plays, was able to force a fumble. They tipped the ball at the line of scrimmage that was intercepted. The Steelers' defense made the bigger plays, but Burrow was largely untouchable in that game. I mean, he played really, really well. The frustration has to be mounting, and we don't ever really say that about any particular individual player on the defensive side. It's always about the quarterback when the roles are such that the offense is playing well and the defense isn't. But I thought that was one of Burrow's better games that we've seen from him. The Steelers just came up with a couple big plays on him that ended up costing Cincinnati the game, but I can't even imagine what would be said in Pittsburgh had Cincinnati somehow won that game with that level of a defensive performance. Oddly, it was Pittsburgh's defense that sealed the win for them, even though they got largely chucked around the field for four quarters. I mean, they got beat up pretty good.
No question about that. And, quite the performance. Now the Steelers have a little bit of a cushion after the Eagles beat Baltimore. Are you surprised? I mean, I know Baltimore's played a tough schedule, but are you surprised at how Baltimore is playing?
I am, to be honest with you. I thought the narrative coming out of that game, and understandably so, is once again their Hall of Fame kicker left a bunch of points on the board.
Yeah,
not something we're used to seeing, but at the same time, they had pretty good control over that game. They were playing well early. It seems like the Ravens recently have really kind of struggled to finish games. I don't know how many times we're going to say it, but every time they play Pittsburgh, they probably should have won the game.
They
should have won that, and they have Philadelphia. And that doesn't take anything away from Philadelphia, a team that did a phenomenal job defensively on what should be a very potent offense. But I feel like what we're seeing is teams are really catching up to what the Ravens are going to do after their script. Their script is very tough to defend. That's why they score quickly early in game, jump out to leads. But they're getting a combination of a defense that really just can't get right for whatever reason. I thought they did a decent job against Philadelphia, but not enough when it counted. They lost situationally. It more than anything, their offense becomes stale. They're not making the explosive plays, although they're still trying to make them later in games. So it's adding up to a point where they're not able to make the splash plays to end games like they're trying to do, but they don't want to resort to anything else either. They can't put together those kind of classic Lamar Jackson 8-play 80-yard drives where four guys have plays of 10 yards or more, everyone's doing something down the field, and all of a sudden they're in the end zone. we haven't seen that later in games from Baltimore. And that's holding them back, obviously. I mean, it shouldn't be, not to suggest at all. I would like to point out that, to be honest with you, if I was betting, I probably still would bet Baltimore to win the division, considering who Pittsburgh has down the stretch here. But Baltimore should be winning more games than they are. Now, is that going to matter here in December when you know, the temperatures drop and the heat gets ratcheted up on every team in the league? There's a lot more at stake. They have a lot more talent than what they're playing with. I feel like at some point they will put it together, and maybe a loss like this is kind of a catalyst for them to get going. But you got to be, you know, you got to be worried if you're in Baltimore right now, because they really, the situation should be reversed. They should have a 2-3 game lead on what turned out to be just a 2-horse race for the AFC North, when most people thought it was probably going to be 3-4. With Pittsburgh at the bottom of it, Pittsburgh's what, 1.5-2 game lead within the division now, and you know, tough road ahead of them. But Baltimore can't lose really anymore. So
no,
they put themselves in a tough spot. I don't know what exactly they're going to do to get out of it. But they have a lot more talent than what we're seeing in the second half of these games.
I think completely healthy, Detroit, in my opinion, is 7 to 10 points better than Philadelphia. But Detroit is not even remotely completely healthy, especially on defense right now. I think the Eagles have now become the best team in the NFC. That's my opinion. How do you view that?
Yeah, that's just the weirdest thing to me. It took me probably 5 games to warm up to the idea that Philadelphia is actually a good team, just because I was the opposite last year. A team that just completely fell apart down the stretch, you know, historically fell apart. They've answered every challenge. You know, they're playing outstanding, winning football. It's not for the fantasy lovers. It's not big splash plays all the time. But in the trenches, situational football, they're beating everybody. And I agree with you. I don't think it's getting enough attention how beat up Detroit is. They lost like 7 starters on defense.
Yeah.
And they are, in my opinion, it's not even close, the best, most balanced team in the NFL. But how many of these guys are going to be around? How many more of them are going to get hurt? How deep do they have to go into that depth? But hats off to Dan Campbell for figuring out a way to get through everything, and you know, perhaps Matt Eberflus helped him out a little bit to send the game into overtime, not necessarily winning it, but that Thanksgiving game, I think, is one we'll all remember for a long time. Detroit is, you know, they're at a point, I think, where Philadelphia is surging and Detroit's probably falling off. I do think that's due to injuries. They got to hold off Minnesota as well. Minnesota's a tough team to beat, as we saw on Sunday. I don't think Philadelphia is, you know, exactly, you know, shaking with what they have in front of them as far as the division goes. So it might be a situation where Philadelphia peaks a little bit earlier, and Detroit has to kind of, you know, regroup and find that second win down the stretch. But I tell you, the NFC playoffs are going to be fun. I'm not sure which way it's going to go, but we haven't even mentioned Green Bay in all of this. That's a team that can beat anybody that's out there. I'm not sure they've played their best football yet. So you're looking at 4, maybe 5 teams there that could make a run. And I think the season, as far as the NFC playoffs go, is really starting this weekend. You know, this is where it's really going to matter. We've seen all this up to this point, and Detroit has just, you know, boat race teams up to this point in the season. Are they going to be able to hang on to that, get their guys healthy, and get back to where they were around midseason? Or, you know, how far off are they going to fall if they have to kind of battle through these injuries while Philadelphia continues to streak, Minnesota gets hot, and it's going to be crazy. I think you got the strength really was said to be in the AFC, but I think the NFC is playing better football through 12 weeks.
Rematch with Cleveland for the Steelers, but this time in Pittsburgh. Jameis Winston has dramatically changed what we think of the Cleveland Browns offense. Your thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I think that Jameis Winston took him from the laughing stock of the league to something that you know, can resemble mediocrity. That's quite an accomplishment. Makes you wonder if Cleveland would have stalled the trade deadline had they thought that the difference in their team would be as drastic as it is by changing quarterbacks. And it really kind of seems like maybe they're the only ones that really thought Deshaun Watson was something other than a complete team killer the way that he was. And to their credit, and I don't know if they really want the credit for this, but signing a guy like Winston's absolutely perfect. He's a unifier. Yeah. He's goofy. He doesn't really care what people think of him so much. It makes the team relaxed, I think. You see that a lot more when he's on the field. And they're able to execute with the 11 guys they have out there a lot better than what they did with Watson. That said, they seem to hold him under wraps quite a bit. I'm not sure they really unleash Winston on a whole lot of things. They don't want him to throw deeper down the field. He's got kind of an interception problem, as we saw last night. You're not sure what you're going to get from him or how much they're going to let him factor into the decision overall. But he can play winning football. He's not going to put up 30 points a game, I don't think. But like the Steelers saw in their first game, which really wasn't all that long ago, it's kind of weird. We're back to talking about them already, but he can put together a drive in crunch time when it matters. And I think that's the type of game the Steelers expected to play. With a little bit more time this time to prepare for it, I think you'll get a better effort from the Steelers, especially early in the game. But it's a must-win game for the Steelers because legitimately this could be the last game they win this season. You know, not to act as if Cincinnati is a juggernaut or anything, but you saw what that offense can do. And Pittsburgh saw what Cleveland's defense can do. And outside of that, you're playing three teams that very well could be in the Super Bowl. Two of them could be playing each other in the Super Bowl. So this kicked off a really difficult stand for the Steelers, one of the hardest five-game stretches they've had in recent memory. So they need this, and I think there's a little bit of get-back mentality for the Steelers, a game that they know they could have won in Cleveland, difficult environment, but that one stung a bit, and we saw the way that they responded to that. I think they're confident in what they can do, and it's a situation where they got to go put it out on the field, obviously. But Cleveland's a team they know they can beat. They can't let this one go. This is one they've got to get.
Well, let me ask you this: what do you make of Kansas City? I mean, they're winning. I've got that, but what do you make of that team?
Kansas City. Here's the thing. I'll give you an answer to this, and it's. My gut tells me what I'm saying now, I'm going to think it's the stupidest thing I've ever said, potentially after one game. And the reason I say that is because Kansas City has taken what the Patriots did in the later Tom Brady years and elevated it to an even higher level. They don't even play four quarters. They play situational. That's it.
Yes. Yes.
They're going to win on third down, offensively and defensively. They're going to win on special teams. They're going to win turnovers, by and large, though they can make a few on offense. They know that they can. They're going to win the 13 most important plays of the game. And they know they're going to split or maybe even lose the remaining, say, 60 plays. However it is that shapes out, they've built themselves to know this is championship football. This down, this distance, we have to get this, and we will, because that's how we win games. Now, whatever it is that happened for them to beat the Raiders, I don't know if you watched that game, but that was just ridiculous. Kansas City has extreme protection problems. Patrick Mahomes might not make it through the year. I mean, it was that bad. Max Crosby could have had the game of his life if he was going against a quarterback who's not used to being pressured that heavily throughout a game. Mahomes did some heroic things to get rid of the ball. You know, Crosby was all over him for the majority of that game, and almost won him the game. Very well could have won him the game. Kansas City has that championship savvy. You know, you go back to something Michael Jordan would say, I got to a point in my career where I could direct the momentum of the game. I knew how to kind of play with it back and forth. When you're at that level, it's not the score. It's not the stat. It's knowing those moments. It's knowing when to do this or that or the other thing that's going to break the opponent. And I think that's where the Chiefs are. It's dangerous to say that in football because there's a lot more moving pieces than there are in basketball. But I think what Jordan is saying with that is, I know when to pick spots, and I know what situations to win versus other ones that I'm probably not going to have to. That's where they are. And they're making games close. You know, to put it simply, a buddy of mine said he's paying for a vacation on betting the under on Kansas City this season. People still seem to think that they're going to make a ton off of Kansas City blowing up to 35, 40 points a game. They're not that offense anymore. They don't have the protection. They can't run. They don't have receiving help as much as they're going to need to. Kudos to Travis Kelce. It looks like he's playing on the absolute last of whatever it is that he has in his Hall of Fame career. They don't have much, but they're surviving on their ability to know when to go and win the downs they have to win. And that, you know, I don't know how far that takes them in what's going to be probably a pretty competitive AFC. I think they're going to get beat this year, but they've done a remarkable job staying relevant, staying very difficult to beat. I think that, week 17 game with the Steelers is really going to tell something about both those teams because it's a great matchup. Kansas City finally slowed down to the point where both of them, maybe their best skill is dragging the other team to the bottom of the ocean to fight it out there. And I think you have two teams with very fitting styles in that way. It's going to be interesting to see how they can play it out and how the season ends for both of them.
Well said. Always enjoy every second, my friend. Appreciate it so much. Thanks for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
The great Neil Coulong. All right. Half hour. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Best in new inventory. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a terrific service department that backs it up every step of the way. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11, 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Jack Ham, Dick Girardi tomorrow. Jack at 110. DJ will be at 135. Brad Nessler on Thursday as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Let SMC be your MVP. With their all-star lineup of new Fords, Sunbury Motors has 31 of J.D. Power's best-in-class 2024 Ford Bronco Sports, discounted up to $4,250, and starting at just $28,815. SMC has 18 of the number one selling SUVs of all time, the 2025 Ford Explorer, slashed up to $5,300 and priced for just $43,920. Choose from over 40 of Motor Trend's number one ranked full-size truck, the Ford F-150. And Sunbury Motors has them reduced up to a whopping $12,416 with available 1.9% financing for 60 months. Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, proudly owned by the Mertz family since 1915. Remember, Sunbury Motors Ford gives you more for your trade.
In-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You know, it's cold out. It's great to just go inside, watch some games, enjoy, and make sure you're fully stocked at Brewer's Outlet. Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. Imports, domestics, microbrews. The best selection of beer anywhere. Wine coolers, water, soft drinks, snacks. They roast their peanuts fresh and hot every day. Six great flavors of slushies. Pickle bar. Led by the barrels and the dills, without question, second to none. look, it's the holidays. You want to make sure you're fully stocked. It's been cold out. You want to make sure you're fully stocked. That way it's like, you know what? I want to watch the Eagles game. I want to watch the Penn State championship game against Oregon. I'm just going to walk over to my fridge, and I already picked it up. We're good. And when it comes to gifts, you're always baffled about what to get people sometimes. A Brewers Outlet gift card. Right? You're going to make them happy with that. Just a suggestion from me to you. All at Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street in Sunbury, the beverage supermarket. National Letter of Intent Day is tomorrow. Normally for Penn State, and they're still going to do this, it is a really fun celebration. There will be one element that I think might be a little different tomorrow because of the game planning for the Big Ten championship game. Because normally this thing was, they've been doing this the third Wednesday of December. Now they're doing it the first. Yeah, I'll get to that in 1 second. Well, because Penn State is playing on Saturday, the coaches are all in there reviewing practice tapes, game planning, things like that. So my guess is that we'll occasionally see an assistant coach, especially if it's the one that recruited the player, right, as the lead recruiter. But they're going to be, you know, usually they're all right there, all right there, all right there. I think there's going to be a lot of back and forth between the office and the recruits. James will be there. James will not do a he's not going to be doing a recruiting press conference tomorrow. They're going to have Andy Frank, Kenny Sanders, and Alan Zimaitis. They'll do it, you know, as part of the recruiting group, because James needs to get the football. Penn State's practicing Wednesday afternoon. So that's why, you know, so it'll be just a couple subtle changes. But, yeah, subtle changes. And I think how it's done. But it's going to, I think I have to be over there between 6:30 and 6:45 tomorrow morning, something like that. Let's get to the part Todd's concerned about. No, it does not run into the show, so we're good. We're good. Always thinking of you, buddy.
We have Jack at 1:10, as long as you're there by 1:10.
Yeah, Jack will be there at 1:10.
Yep.
And then Dick Girardi at 1:35. We got a big show tomorrow. Big show. Now, as for the letter of intent part, football confuses me sometimes so much where I don't get it. Right? It's not as if college basketball does everything right, but what, 30 years ago? Even longer? 35 years ago? They started doing the early signing period? And it's always this second Wednesday in November. Well, you pretty much get guys locked down, locked down, locked on, and boom, you sign them on signing day, and then go through their senior season and enjoy it. You are now starting to recruit other people for later on, but there's a way to do it where it's not like you're out every second trying to find people. And as intense as any recruitment is, college basketball is more of an even pace to it. How about that? So I always advocated an early signing period for college football based on my basketball experience. But when they said we're going to do an early signing period, I didn't envision them doing it in December. Like, what are we doing here? Man, for goodness sakes, when I meant early signing period, I meant like the first week of August. You got players and coaches coming off the June visits, things like that, where everybody's making up their mind, and almost every one of the guys that verbally committed to Penn State signed. Well, if they would have signed in August, and I don't understand why the first Wednesday in August can't be early signing period, with the late signing period being the first Wednesday in February. If you decide you're not, if you decide you're not sure, you can keep your recruitment open. Why not? This week is ridiculous. It makes no sense to me at all. So you have, and it's not just Penn State. Let's see here. You have this week, ding, ding, ding. I just want to check and make sure how many games are being played this week. So you've got, those are all the ranked teams. Let's just get to the college football. Yeah, I want to get away from all the ranked teams. There's got to be a way to do this, right? I guess they are all ranked, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 12. You have 12 teams playing this week. Okay? UNLV and Boise are playing Friday. Tulane and Army are playing Friday. Now maybe the recruitment at Army is a little different. Right? Then everybody else, SMU, Clemson, Texas, Georgia, Arizona State, Iowa State, Oregon, and Penn State, are all playing on Saturday. So you got 12 schools getting ready where the head coaches and everybody involved have to stop to do this, which is really important and critical to the future of your program, while still preparing for a game. Really? See, the college football makes decisions that, to me, more often than not, lack common sense. Why can't you do what basketball's been doing? Second Wednesday in November, yeah, maybe the first game of the season's over with, whatever. But you do it. I've only heard of one time where there was a slight backfire, and that was with Skip Albrecht. Michigan, Albrecht was a senior. Albrecht, they signed the class, and then Albrecht hurt his hip, I believe it was, 8 games into the season. Well, that meant he had another season of eligibility, but because Michigan had already signed and had assigned his scholarship to the next class because he was a senior, he wasn't coming back. Well, then he got hurt. So then he ended up transferring and finishing his career at Purdue on the 5th year because he decided to come back. That's about the only time I've ever heard of something where it was like, oh, okay, that didn't quite work right. You know, it wasn't Michigan's fault. It wasn't Skip's fault. It just happened. Why can't college football do this the first Wednesday in August and just get it done? I've never understood that for the life of me. I hear thousands of reasons. I guess the Southern coaches don't like it. Like, you know what? You don't rule the world.
That's what I was going to say. I think when we talked about it this summer and when the Coaches Association voted, it was the Southern high school coaches in the SEC that didn't want it that early.
Right.
Still don't know why.
I don't get it.
No.
I don't get it. I mean, you want to be sitting there. I mean, I realize a guy, let's take Kirby Smart. He's had to do this for a long time, right? Because they're always right around the playoff picture, right? You know, Nick Saban did it for a long time, too, because they were always in it. But, geez, I mean, in terms of time management, this is illogical. If somebody doesn't want to sign, they have the first Wednesday in February. What's the rub? I don't get it. And I know the Southern high school coaches don't want it. Well, you don't rule the world. Okay, here's one for you. Everybody else is adjusting. Adjust.
And it's not like the Southern high school coaches are on a massively different schedule than the rest of the country in high school football.
No, they aren't. They aren't. But it's just like, to me, on a personal basis, it doesn't make sense to do it this time. Do it earlier. And again, I'm using college basketball as my model. Now, I realize there is a massive difference. and that is in college football, you're signing 25 players. And in college basketball, you're signing 3. So I understand the dynamics of the numbers. But to me, with 25, I'd really want to go early. Because the vast majority of these guys, for example, on the Penn State side, they aren't changing their mind. 98% of them have said, yep, and guess what? They signed. No drama. No drama. Okay. I don't know. I don't know.
I think you'd think the kids would want it in August just to get it out of the way before the season starts, like you said.
Yeah, I would think you'd want to enjoy your senior year. And by the way, if you're a late bloomer, the first Wednesday in February is there. Or you're a high profile guy and you can't make up your mind between a couple of schools or maybe 3 or 4 schools, they're still going to want you in February. Yeah? Right?
I wonder if it's a function of, you know, enrolling early, too. I wonder if that has something to do with it. Because obviously that February signing period, if you sign as a senior, is after you can enroll early.
Right. I mean, if you sign in August, first Wednesday of August, I mean, that is definitely...
early enough.
and that definitely a like pathway to get you into school to start in January. Hey, by the way... did you see Louis Carn II died?
Yes.
The legendary St. John's coach. He led them to 2 Big East titles. They were in the Final Four in 85. One of the truly great personalities in the history of the game. I mean, in New York, I can tell you, all those games I've done at the Garden, when he'd show up, he's treasured. Treasured. All right, had that voice, Louis Carn II. He had that voice. My goodness, you know. He had 18 21 seasons, 18 NCAA tournament appearances. Right? He's the one that made St. John's basketball in the Garden special. You know, Mark Jackson, Walter Berry, Chris Mullin all thought the world of him. And let's face it, there's St. John's, part of the foundation of the Big Ten. Of the Big East. My apologies, I said Big Ten. Big East. And he just had a great personality. Right? And he just... he and his wife Mary... Listen to this. Louis Carn II died at 99. He and his wife married 73 years, and she's still alive. One point he left St. John's, right? And he coached the New York Nets in the old ABA before they became the New Jersey, then Brooklyn Nets. And he had Rick Barry, by the way, on that team. And... he says, I lost 50 games coaching professionally. That was pressure. I didn't feel like getting out of bed. My mother could coach this team. Right.
It was the year of the Big East that I grew up on, so.
Oh, yeah. No. Read Dana O'Neill's book.
I have Dana O'Neill's book, and there's one, I have the one that she used for a lot of her research on the 80s stuff, too, that it's really good about early 80s Big East.
Oh, incredible. And the 30 for 30, Requiem for the Big East on ESPN is brilliantly done. It's brilliant. Dave, you know, that's one thing. Like, I'm concerned... in this era, and I think Greg Sankey might fit into this, and I think Tony Petitti's a little bit like this. I think Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti have some visionary in them. I give them a lot of credit. But you go back to that era, the visionaries were Dave Gavitt in the Big East and Joe Paterno. They were the visionaries. Gavitt took what was a scattered ECAC East and formed the Big East. Joe was trying to form the All-Sports Eastern Conference. I mean, these were visionaries. These people got it. They don't need analytics. They understood what they were doing. They had a feel for the game. They had a feel for the sport. They had a feel for the moment. Right? Well, Carnesecca was part of that. I mean, Gavitt put it all together, and then you got Carnesecca, you got Boeheim, you got John Thompson, you got Rowley. I mean, it's like, I mean, Raftery was the head coach at Seton Hall. Goodness gracious. I mean, the Big East thing, right? That night, Louis kept wearing the one sweater over and over again. They played Georgetown at the Garden, and John Thompson came out with the identical sweater. Oh, man. So Louis Carnesecca was 99. A true gem. Wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
Hi, this is Season. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855. Visit our website at purdyinsurance.com or check us out on Facebook to see what we can do for you.
So that'll be tomorrow. I mean, I can propose the first Wednesday in August all I want. They're going to do it tomorrow. I mean, if you're going to complain about something, come up with a solution to it, or at least make a suggestion. So I complained about it. I gave you a suggestion. It could be garbage, but I came up with a suggestion. Oh, by the way, 8 o'clock, the kickoff. It's actually going to be 8:15. When it's all said and done, we'll be on at 6:30 Saturday night. Okay? We got Magic Radio tonight. Talk to Santa. All right.
Talk to Santa.
I wonder if Matt's going to bring his kids in.
You have to register. You have to register for that a while ago. So.
Well, he may have.
I'm not arguing that point, but.
I mean, you finally get the kid to correctly pronounce Lamborghini.
Yeah.
Oh. I'll never forget, early in my career, they put me on the air with Santa Claus because they needed somebody to run the show. And at that time, the hot toy was My Little Pony. And every time they would call in, they'd call about My Little Pony. And he'd get confused. He'd say, "Pony? You want a pony?" Well, I'm sitting there, I'm going, "No, Santa, always thinking big. My Little Pony from Hasbro." It's like, oh.